I'm Rose Beiler, Associate Professor at the University of Central Florida, and you're listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Welcome to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Riches, the regional initiative for collecting the histories, experiences, and stories of Central Florida, is an umbrella program housing interdisciplinary public history projects that bring together different departments at the University of Central Florida with profit and nonprofit sectors of the community in order to promote the collection and preservation of the region's history. By facilitating research that records and presents the stories of communities, businesses, and institutions in Central Florida, Riches seeks to provide the region with a deeper sense of its heritage. This series will feature a podcast every 2 weeks, in the middle and at the end of each month, that will explore various aspects of Central Florida's history. Today's episode, The Moore Complex, Preserving the Legacy of Harry T. Moore, Part 2, highlights the major preservation efforts that were initiated during the late 1990s and early 2000s. Along with other experts, representatives from the Moore Complex lend audiences a better understanding of the local preservation initiatives in Central Florida.
The preservation efforts to keep the Moores' legacy alive is a true testament to their impact on Central Florida. The Moore Complex in Mims, Florida represents the lasting impact the Moores had on their community. Experts Bill Gary, Juanita Barton, Althamese Barnes, Dr. Oscar Dixon, Ben Green, and Dr. Jim Clark give a detailed background on the Moores and their influence in the community. Author Ben Green gives a detailed background on Harry T. Moore.
He was born in the panhandle of Florida in a little town called Houston, outside of Live Oak in Suwannee County. He lived there with his mother and father till he was about 9 when his father died. Then it was really just Harry and his mother. She sent him when he was probably 11 or so. She sent him to Jacksonville to live with his 3 aunts, which was a really important period of his life.
President of the Moore Complex, Bill Gary, gives us a detailed description of how he got involved in the Moore Complex.
I had served as president of the North Brevard branch of NAACP for many, many years. Once the county and had begun to build the Moore Memorial Park itself. After that was completed, there was a home site development committee that met with the county trying to help develop what the park should be. Once the park's physical attributes, that is the parking lot, the cultural center, was built, the home site development committee dissolved. And in 2002, the Moore Cultural Complex Incorporated, which is a nonprofit support group, was formed. I was asked in 2004 to work as a co-chair of the Moore Festival, because at that time Ms. Juanita Barton was working to have this festival, and she asked me to be her co-chair. And so I agreed to be the co-chair, and I worked with them for probably 6 months. At the end of that time, we elected another chair who served for 2 or 3 months. He stepped down because of medical reason. And so in late 2004, I was asked if I would become president of the board, and I've been president of the board.
Cultural coordinator Juanita Barton gives a background on how she was first introduced to the Moore story.
I was born in this community. My parents knew the Moores. My sisters and brothers were taught by the Moores. So I got a very good picture of them prior to my even coming here.
How did the concept of the complex and promoting the Moores' legacy begin?
It actually began with a request by then state president of the NAACP, Mr. T.H. Poole, who inquired about buying the old Moore home site. He wanted to buy the land that the Moore's house had stood on, and at the time his idea was that we would turn it to some kind of park. He asked us to arrange a meeting with the then county commissioner to talk about the county having purchased that land. And actually, that's how the whole thing started, and the concept started was purchasing the land, where the Moore home site had stood. And we, our branch, found out who owned the land then and got with the county commissioner. And negotiations began after that to purchase the land. So the concept of this Moore Memorial Park and Cultural Center began with that idea of buying the land where the Moore homes had stood.
How did Moore get involved with the NAACP?
In 1934, he was living in Brevard County. He was teaching school. He was an elementary school teacher and actually principal. A cousin of his wife got some NAACP pamphlets in the mail and was afraid of it, was scared just to even have them in his possession. So he brought them to Harry T. Moore and showed them to him, and Harry T. Moore said, "This is just what I've been waiting for." And so he started the first local branch of the NAACP.
After joining the NAACP, Moore became a local pioneer for equal pay and voting rights for African Americans in the community. Ms. Barton describes the impact the Moore's activism had in the community.
Well, let me tell you, their influence was so pervasive until when I remember, I was only a year and a half old when they died, but I remember my parents using their voting methods into the 50s and 60s. They had, we often think in terms of Martin Luther King in the 60s and his block voting. Block voting began here in the state of Florida with Harry T. Moore, when he registered more than 115,000 African Americans in this state to vote.
While the Moore's political activism inspired their community, for many whites in Central Florida, Harry T. Moore posed a threat to the ideological way of life as well as their economic development. Dr. Clark explains the supposed threat the Moores posed to many business owners in Central Florida.
I think one of the things that surprised me was coming to an understanding, really, of the role of the Klan. I had always assumed that the job of the Klan was to try to, if you will, drive out African Americans. The role of the Klan, especially in Orange County and in Lake County, was to keep blacks down. That generation of African Americans coming back from the war who didn't want to go pick oranges, who didn't want to work in the fields, who wanted something better. The Klan's role was to intimidate, to threaten, to harm, to keep these people picking oranges. Much of the violence of leading to the murder of Harry T. Moore simply involved picking oranges, and the efforts by law enforcement officials such as Sheriff Willis McCall in Lake County to keep a workforce in the fields picking oranges.
As part of a rising number of local preservation efforts, Dr. Jim Clark donated uncensored FBI files on the Moore's murder to the University of Central Florida's Special Collections. Dr. Clark explains how he obtained these valued documents and their importance to Central Florida.
I went up to the state attorney's office, Norm Wolfinger, and he had inherited all these files, and I was going to file a request under open records law, which would have made these FBI files public record. He wasn't going to fight that, so he said, "Sure, go ahead and look at them." I went up to his office in Sanford, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And I remember just starting to Xerox as fast as I can, because I was afraid somebody was going to walk in the middle and say, "We're from the FBI, we're taking our papers back." And so I just copied as much as I could and came back to Orlando with what I had. When I had finished the newspaper articles, I donated them to the University of Central Florida, not only as a civil rights case, but also giving people for the first time the ability to look at raw FBI files.
Now, why do you feel it's important for people to know about the Moores?
Historically, we consider Harry T. Moore as the first leadership martyr of the NAACP. We all know that for every person that is well known, there are people who didn't get the recognition. But as far as leadership is concerned, Harry T. is considered the first martyr in this NAACP leadership circle. Many people know about Medgar Evers, the Medgar Evers story has been put on film, documentary, movies, but the Harry T. Moore story has not gotten the recognition that it should. It is not placed in the annals of historiography as it should be.
And as we know, he was years before Mecca ever. So the issue there is about giving these stories the rightful place in history and the historiography of not only academia, but public history as well.
Within the Central Florida community, Harry T. Moore's influence still resonates with residents today. Decades after their murder, the members of the community still celebrate the Moores' accomplishments. Our experts describe the impact the Moores had in the Central Florida community.
Well, I think it fits into it significantly from a number of areas. One, Harry T. Moore, for one, was very instrumental in registering a very large number of black voters during the 40s, which, although did not give blacks the political power they eventually would get in the state of Florida, but it began to have some leverage in elections so that the concerns of blacks who lived in Florida was being heard, at least. He filed the first lawsuit to equalize black and white teachers' salaries, which, of course, was later denied by the Florida Supreme Court, but that first lawsuit spawned lawsuits in other southern states, and eventually that became the law throughout Florida and all those other southern states there. He also raised concerns about the police brutality that was going on and lynchings. As you know, at one time in the early 1900s, the state of Florida had more lynchings per capita than any other southern state. It's kind of a little known fact because many people have never really seen Florida as one of those hateful states like that, but Florida has a history of racial violence that goes back a while.
The legacy is still very much alive and well. We are living proof of that. The mere fact that I'm here to speak to you is a part of that legacy. Without his work here in the state of Florida, with equalizing teacher pay, with dealing with social issues, injustices, much of what you see today before you would not have happened.
What do you think the future of the Harry T. Moore complex is?
It is to become a bank of information about the Moores, not only about their civil rights activities, but also about their activities in the community, because oftentimes people think of them as civil rights leaders, but they were people just like anybody else. They had children. They attended church. They gave to the community. They were philanthropists as well. So we want to give a whole picture of who they were.
Dr. Dixon places the Moores' legacy within the context of public history and local preservation initiatives.
We always like to think that, especially when you're looking at public history, that you begin local, and then because public history begins with the community. And from that community history, then you synthesize it into these broader themes. So what you have is a local story that is such a central and important piece to the larger overall theme of African-American history during the Civil Rights Movement. So you have a local piece of history here, but it is a large congruent part to the larger Civil Rights Movement.
Founding director of the John Gilmore Riley Research Center and director of the Florida African-American Heritage Preservation Network, Althamese Barnes, explains the importance of the Moore's legacy and the personal impact it has had on her life.
I think it is important for people to know about persons such as Harry and Harry T. Moore because their lives represent those struggles, the perseverance, the resilience that it took during a very trying period in our history, the period of legalized segregation. The Moores had to be very brave individuals for all that they contributed, particularly, and I know more, I can speak more to Harry T., because coming out of the NAACP movement, I was secretary of the state NAACP for 14 years. And so during that time, heard a lot about Dr. Moore. I know the dangers involved because my husband was also on the executive committee of the state NAACP and a field director for the Northwest region of the state of Florida. So I, having traveled with my husband through a lot of those back roads in North Florida, many times we knew we had to turn around and make sure we got back home to Tallahassee before dark. So Mr. Moore went way beyond what we did, and the time in which he did it was much more dangerous than when my husband and I were making those drives. So I just think it's very important to know the sacrifice they made, but also the result of their efforts and how many people got to vote. Many people got more decent wages because of the sacrifices that these people made.
Many members of the Moore Cultural Complex have been personally touched by the Moore story. As longstanding members of the community, many board members grew up hearing about the Moores and their heroism. President of the Moores Complex, Bill Geary, describes the personal impact the Moores legacy has had on him.
Oh, it speaks to me in volumes, just the fact that I live where I want to live. My children went to the better schools in this area. My son is a graduate of the University of Florida. I personally enjoy, you know, many liberties, including that of voting for who I want to, campaigning for who I want to. I have a personal relationship with the chief of police of the city. I know the sheriff here. And we work together on different projects. So his legacy impacts my life on just about all levels.
The Moore Complex represents the local initiative to keep the Moore's memory alive. As our experts explained, the Moore's influence still resonates with the community today. Their unrelenting dedication to equality and courage in the face of unsurmountable odds has solidified the Moore's place in the history of the civil rights movement. As time goes on, the Moore story will not be limited to local history. Rather, their legacy will resonate with people nationwide. By remaining active and involved in their community, our experts have sparked a community-wide preservation initiative to preserve the Moore's legacy and pass their story down for generations to come.
Thank you for listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Feel free to contact us with any questions or comments on the program that you just heard. Please join us for the next episode, The Florida Historical Society, an interview with Dr. Nick Wynn.